From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about. Zorba, tell us.
Yes, colon cancer in young adults, it's on the rise. Why? What are the stats? What can we do about it? And detergent pods, a risk to children. Quite interesting because we discussed this a couple of years ago and the media finally picked up on what we discussed on Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
That coming up in a while. What's our recipe?
Retro turkey loaf. Do you like turkey?
Yeah.
Do you like loaf, like meatloaf?
Yeah.
Well, how about retro turkey loaf?
Why is it retro?
Well, you know, it's all in the name, Tom. It's all in the name. If we called it modern turkey loaf, it wouldn't be there. But if we called it like Facebook turkey loaf, would that make it better?
No. Retro is much better. 800-462-7413, toll free, and to the phones now, Zorba, with a Port Wing, Wisconsin listener. Hi.
Hi, Tom.
How can we help?
The last 3 times I've gone to my ophthalmologist for an eye appointment for an exam, I've gotten a really bad reaction from the drops. And the first time I panicked, I woke up in the, well, I didn't wake up in the morning because I hadn't slept all night. At this point, I've looked on the internet and talked to my doctor, and we're kind of working on it. But I was wondering if I just have to put up with this every time, or if there's some experience people have had with this.
What did the ophthalmologist tell you?
We were initially going to try just one of the drops the next time, and mm-hmm. He did try the one drop, got the same reaction. I think they were going to try the other drop and leave out one of them the last time, but they didn't. So I'm not sure if the drop that they didn't leave out would solve the problem or not.
Sure. But, tell me, the problem is your eye is tearing afterwards? Tell a little bit more about that. For a couple of days or a week or a month?
How long? Yeah, the next morning, doctor, they were just bloody. And I could hardly get them open.
Oh,
and I panicked and went in for an exam. My doctor was on vacation. I went into an exam from the backup doctor. And the eyes checked out. I mean, it takes about a week for them to clear up. I couldn't have worked the next day without.
Oh yeah, no.
These scaring
can be
everybody.
Awful. Yeah. I've got a couple questions. First of all, do you have glaucoma or anything significant at all?
No, I don't. I have cataracts in both eyes, and they've both been replaced. And I have 20/20 vision with the replacement.
Yeah. So you know, you don't have to. I don't think you have to get your eyes dilated every time you go to the doctor, the eye doctor. That's the first thing. I wouldn't get them dilated that often. I mean, they dilate them to look at peripheral vision and other things, and I would say, hey, I'm reacting to the eye drop. Do the best vision you can, and I might get them dilated once every 4 to 5 years.
I do have some scarring in the back, but it isn't affecting my vision yet.
Do they know what it's from?
Yeah, I think he does. I think he says that there's about a 50-50 chance I'm going to need some laser adjustment at some point, and maybe 20% chance I'm going to need some surgery, because something about the scarring on the back that can interrupt your vision if it moves into your vision somehow.
Right. My suggestion is to minimize the amount of a number of times, that's number one, that you need to have the full eye examination with dilated eyes. That's the first thing I would do. I would say, why are you dilating the eyes, and is it necessary? And I'll give you an example. I go to the dentist on a regular basis, and I get my teeth cleaned, and the dentist every year wants to do bite wings. Well, I go, I don't want to have that radiation. I don't want bite wings every time. And he goes, well, it's really good to pick things up. And I thought, I'm not going to get them every time. So I get it every 3 to 5 years. And it picks something up, you know, like after doing it for 20 years, every 3 to 5 years, mm-hmm. It actually picks something up. But I didn't do it all the time, and I still feel comfortable with that. And after he filled the cavity, said, do you want one the next year? And I did, because I wanted to make sure the cavity was okay. And that was it. Now I'm back to my 3 to 5 year schedule. So first of all, I'd say, what is the goal in dilating the eyes? And if the eye doctor says, well, it's part of a good examination, that's not good enough to me. It would be, is it part of this scar tissue that you saw, and is it necessary to follow it? And why don't you try to do it without dilating it and see if you can see that scar area? That's what I would do. And then the only next question is, the drops that are used. There are a variety of drops that are used. When your eyes are dilated, they dilate the eyes with a drop. And the second drop is to reverse the dilatation. And that's because it's uncomfortable. You can't watch TV and do things. But if you don't reverse the dilatation with some of the eye drops, it'll normally undilate in about 6 to 8 hours, as I understand it, with the more recent drops. So you might just want to get your eyes dilated and not take the drops that go afterwards to try to reverse the dilatation. And that would reduce the drug load on your eye by 50%. That might do it.
Thank you. That sounds like a great idea to try. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Did you say your eyes were scary looking on Halloween?
Oh, let me tell you, I freaked out a cashier at the grocery store. She was really friendly till she looked into my eyes and she panicked.
You know what? Them scary eyes, if you panic somebody at a grocery store.
Thanks so much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. 800-462-7413.
You got to be careful. Scary eyes, Halloween, you know, slasher movies. You just have to be
careful. It's a costume you don't see that on.
No, that's right.
So the phones again, Zorba. Let's welcome a listener now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
When I look at my 16-year-old son, I see a gorgeous young man. His reality is that he has severe cystic acne. He's used so many of the popular commercial products that are on the market, including vitamins, especially blended for teenage skin. And he's so embarrassed by this condition to the point of hiding his face and even avoiding being photographed. Mm-hmm. A couple of his friends are currently using the drug Accutane, and they've seen significant improvement in their skin. So he did beg me to take him to a doctor, which I did. I was worried about the potential side effects of Accutane and was hoping that this doctor may recommend an alternative treatment, but she honed in right away on the Accutane and suggested a 5 to 6 month treatment. His blood work does show slightly elevated triglycerides, but she did clear him to start the drug right away. My questions about Accutane are, what is your opinion of this controversial drug? Are the results worth the side effects of Accutane? And are there any long-term effects of taking it?
Mm-hmm. All good questions, and all the questions that a mother should ask about her child with this. Accutane, by the way, which is a relative of vitamin A, is a great drug. And it has side effects that are significant. So we have to use it very carefully. In fact, the side effects, especially for girls, because if they get pregnant on Accutane, women or girls, if they get pregnant on Accutane, can have a baby with a birth defect. And so Accutane is actually restricted to people who have gone through a course and are certified and continue to be certified. At one point, I used to prescribe Accutane for selected people, and then when the certification came up, we decided as a group that we would only have our dermatologist do that. Your son, we don't have to worry about the pregnancy issue, it then becomes a different issue. Let's look at what Accutane does. It is a great drug. It does help teenagers and adults with cystic acne incredibly well. It works well. My oldest son had cystic acne, Zach. He took it and it cleared it up right away. So the drug is great. So the only side effect are the side effects. And so what are the side effects, short-term and long-term? The short-term side effects are actually significant. Dry mouth, peeling skin, stuff that you know, you can get by with, but they're very significant side effects. And quite often kids say, I'm going to do it once, I'm not going to do it again. And you've got to finish the course for it to be effective. But often teenagers and people with cystic acne, they don't mind the side effects because they'll plow through it because they want to get through the acne. The other side effects are the effects on cholesterol and triglycerides and so on. Are there long-term side effects? It's been on the market for 30 years. If there were long-term side effects, I think we would have known about it within the last 30 years. It's not a new drug. It's an old drug. So I think the long-term side effects are pretty much minimal to non-existent. The real issue is The way to obviate the side effects with cholesterol, because it does affect those, is to eat really, really well during the Accutane times. That's what I tell. Exercise on a regular basis. Go on to a Mediterranean-type diet. Stay away from pizza and burgers and all the stuff you want to have as a teenager. No smoking, of course. They shouldn't be smoking anyway. Reduce those other risk factors so you've got a pristine diet, and that as good as pristine as you can be as a teen. Mm-hmm. And that'll take care of the other side effects. So when I weigh that together, I had my son Zach on it. I would not hesitate to have him on it again. And that's how we, as a family, and I as a doctor, handled it in my family.
That is really good news. Thank you so much. That makes me feel a lot better about starting this.
You are most welcome. And let us know how it works when your son is finished with his treatment.
Will do.
Thanks for your call. Thanks for sharing.
800-462-7413. That's a really hard thing for kids to go through.
Well, it's hard for kids to go through, and it's hard for parents to go through. So from the kid point of view, you've got dryness of mouth, but you want your face to look better. You remember, when I had a zit on my face, it was like the size of a walnut.
Like, do I care now what my face looks like?
It's pretty obvious that neither of us care like we did as teenagers. But also, it's really hard for a parent like this to see your child suffer with acne, and you know you've got a wonderful, beautiful son, and you want him to be better, and then he's got a drug that has potential side effects, and you're concerned about the long-term side effects, and he's probably not because he's a teenager. And you've got to get information and use that balance.
We have an open line now at 800-462-7413, but Zorba, before our next call, cancer rates in young adults?
Yeah, very interesting. First of all, colon cancer.
Colon cancer.
And if we look at colon cancer, we're doing a much better job because we're screening. And we screen people over the age of 50 because most colon cancer occurs over the age of 50. But in a recent article in JAMA Surgery, with that, you're looking at a database of 400,000 patients who had colon and rectal cancer. They found that overall, the colon cancer rate is decreasing. But there's an increase of almost 2% a year in the 20 to 34 age group. Now, there's not a lot of cancer in the 20 to 34 age group, but even thinking about an increase in the 20 to 34 age group means that cancer is starting to affect people at a younger and younger age.
Why would that be, I wonder?
Well, Tom, if I really knew that completely, I'd probably get the Nobel Prize. But cancer of the intestine has changed over the years. When I first started practice, most colon cancer was within 20 centimeters, which was the reach of a proctoscope, and that was about 90% of all colon cancers. And over time, that cancer started to move inward in the colon, and so now you need a colonoscopy basically to do it. And we know it's related to diet, the same for age. We know it's related to diet, that the typical American low-fiber diet that has too much meat in the diet is related to colon cancer, because in societies where they have more poop, they have larger bowel movements with more fiber, they don't have as much colon cancer. So this is a dietary exercise thing. Maybe part of the obesity epidemic is this increase in colon cancer.
Now, you have to ask the question. I think I know your answer. Should we start doing colonoscopies earlier?
No, because the pickup is still going to be quite small. However, what's going to happen with this information is that people who come into their 20s or 30s who have some blood in their stool, and we look at them and we say, it's probably a hemorrhoid, we're going to be a little bit more likely to do a colonoscopy in somebody such as that. So I think that's what we're looking at. I think we're looking at, once again, dietary changes that have not been good in America, and it's a matter of getting our weight under control with diet and with exercise.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller, is listening in West Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba.
How can we help?
I have this, I'm a degenerate macular.
Well, hey,
you caught both of us.
I was going to say, hey, everybody's welcome. Okay, go.
I went to the optometrist a few days ago, and I got my eyes checked, and he told me I had macular degeneration. And I know that's common among diabetics, which I am. And I wondered, I think I should wear sunglasses, somebody I think I read somewhere. And I want to try to prolong this as long as I can before I go blind.
I've got a couple of suggestions, first of
okay.
all. I recommend a vitamin with lutein, L-E-U-T-I-N, in it. Ocuvite happens to be...
I take that.
Good. Excellent, excellent choice. Ocuvite is good. I also recommend that you eat food which has lutein in it because it may help. And I'll give you an example of a common food that we have that is filled with lutein. It's called, it has three letters. It's a three-letter word, not a four-letter word, Tom.
Yep.
It's a three-letter word that you eat. We're going to see that Tom is going to win $100 if he answers this. Well, theoretically.
I should know the answer, but
a three-letter word that we have for breakfast that has lutein in it.
Oats?
No, that's good. Oats, O-A-T. That's very good. Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
Another three-letter word, you fry them sometimes. So fry, sometimes you scramble them. Sometimes you scramble them.
Egg?
Sometimes you poach them.
Egg.
It turns out egg yolks contain lutein.
Uh-huh.
They're very high in lutein. And one theory of the increase in macular degeneration may be that we're eating fewer eggs than we used to. It's quite an interesting controversy.
Green veggies, too, I think.
Yeah, green veggies, too, will also have lutein. And
I eat oatmeal every morning.
Yeah, so I would I might have some eggs. I wouldn't throw them in the oatmeal, but I might have some eggs with them. Now, sunglasses may help. That's a good choice. I'd wear sunglasses outside. I don't want to wear them inside because
right.
you'll fall and break your hip, and that wouldn't help. But outside when you're in the sun. But I would go, Tom made the best suggestion. He said, get thee to an ophthalmologist for a complete evaluation. And I agree. I think that's really important because there's wet and dry, and they can do different things. There are different things that are done with them. So,
My eyes are very dry. They're very patriotic. They're red, white, and blue. And I used some eye drops that were suggested by Walgreens drugstore pharmacist.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything for macular degeneration. I don't think that. It's inside the eye. The drops are only along the outside.
They can make eyes more comfortable.
Yes, they can make. And if your eyes are dry, using an eye drop is going to make your eyes more comfortable. Good point.
Well, they do that. I use it four times a day, and they make my eyes much more comfortable.
Yeah, if they make them more comfortable, I would use it. But get thee to an ophthalmologist. That's my recommendation.
How about those Bono sunglasses? I love those things.
There you go, man. There you go. Go for it. Good choice. You have a great day.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Looking good.
You're looking good. Style counts. Look good, feel good, play good.
Before we take a break, Zorba, let's hear from our favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. All right, Zorba, time...
You know, I'll never stop laughing at that
time
song.
To put on your fedora and break out the Tommy gun.
Okay.
We're going to hear from a few members of the Rough and Tumble Chicago Precinct of the Grammar Police. First, a listener named Angela sent us this message. When I hear people pronounce Chicago the way you do, I assume they are not from Chicago or are North Siders. Everyone I know from the South Side pronounces it the other way.
I pronounce it Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, she pronounces it Chicago.
What's
it? Well, come on. She's wrong. She's from the South Side. I'm from the North Side. I'm right, and she's...
I may have pronounced it the North Side way or the South...
You know what? You're not from the city. It doesn't matter. It matters to this listener. Of course she's from the city. The South Siders and the North Siders, forget it. The South Siders, when there is a debate, the South Siders are always wrong. The North Siders, where I'm from, are always right. It's obvious.
Okay, now we have a listener named Robin who offers a different take on the matter. The following was posted to our Facebook page. Zorba, I would like to thank you.
Wait a second. Did she really paste it like Zorba with an exclamation mark?
You could tell.
Oh, you could. Okay.
I would like to thank you for something you said on a recent show. Despite the usual interesting medical discussions, what I appreciated most was your comment on the pronunciation of Chicago. That has been a pet peeve of mine, but I thought perhaps I was confused, wrong, misguided. You confirmed my opinion. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. You see, a Northsider who's come to my rescue.
Chicago, Chicago. Let's call the whole thing off. If you'd like to join
That's
the ever-growing grammar police, for send your grievances along in an email to...
Zorba at Chicago. No. Zorba at WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Stick around. Our recipe is coming up. More of your calls, of course. Some more interesting topics to talk about and our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next caller, Zorba, retro turkey loaf.
Yes, retro turkey loaf. Now, do you know why retro is in front of the word turkey loaf?
Because it makes it more appealing.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's a 19... When you think of a retro turkey loaf, do you think like of the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, maybe the Eisenhower administration?
Do you remember the scent in the kitchen?
Yeah, the scent in the kitchen. My mother in high heels, which were ridiculous, you know, cooking a little apron that she would always have on. And
but you can't picture the dad doing the carving with retro turkey
loaf. No, you can't. That's exactly... No, you cannot. You cannot picture
Let's
that.
Let's do it.
But the thing about this is it's using turkey instead of meat, so you know, instead of red meat, which is useful, and it's a fun recipe.
Okay.
So it's comfort food for a time of year when we need comfort.
Exactly.
Comfort. So start out with a medium red onion diced.
A medium red onion diced?
You know, I don't think red onions are retro. Red onions are sort of new.
Yeah, they are.
You know, retro is, you know what retro would be? A Bermuda onion.
Yeah.
Because they used to grow them on Bermuda. They don't grow them anymore.
Call them Bermuda.
Well, they call them Bermuda. We call them Bermudas. Yeah. I don't know if anyone else does. Yeah. But they were Bermuda onions because... And then, I mean, now it's all tourists. There are no... Yeah. I was in Bermuda, well, I don't know, a bunch of years ago, and there were no onions. No Bermuda onions.
But we digress.
Yes, but we digress. Sorry, but we digress. Yeah. Digress, okay. Keep me on track. Okay, one green pepper diced.
Green pepper diced.
Now here, this is the important thing. 2 pounds of lean ground turkey.
2 pounds lean ground turkey.
You want to make sure it says lean. Yeah. Otherwise, it's all dark meat. You need some dark meat to be, otherwise it's too dry, but you want lean ground turkey. Mm-hmm. Half cup of your favorite tomato sauce.
Half a cup of tomato sauce.
Half a cup of breadcrumbs.
Half a cup of breadcrumbs.
Now, you want your breadcrumbs to be fresh, and in this recipe, as with all breadcrumb recipes, I use panko. Do you know what panko is?
No idea.
Well, I'm not going to tell you if you don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay,
No, panko are basically Japanese breadcrumbs, and they have more of a, they're kind of a crunch. You could almost, if you wanted to eat breadcrumbs, you could eat these right out of the box.
I'm trying to get the picture. Sitting watching TV.
Moving right along. What's that on your shirt? Breadcrumbs. Yeah. Panko breadcrumbs. Sorry, we have to stop having fun. Let's be serious. Yeah. One large egg white.
A large egg white.
2 tablespoonfuls of brown mustard.
2 big tea brown mustard.
2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
Teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce.
Little tea Worcestershire sauce.
Do you have Worcestershire sauce in your house?
No.
Do you know? Was that a guess?
No. It's a guess. Might be in a cabinet somewhere. I don't know. Moving right along.
Everyone's got Worcestershire sauce somewhere in their house. It just may not have been used for 20 years.
Yeah.
A teaspoon of garlic salt.
Little tea garlic salt.
Half teaspoon of salt.
Half a little tea salt.
Half teaspoon of white pepper.
Half a little tea white pepper.
Quarter teaspoon of cumin.
quarter little tea cumin.
And half a cup of your favorite ketchup.
Half a cup of ketchup.
Heinz. Well, Heinz are
What's the difference? They're all the same.
They're not. There's a huge difference between Heinz and Hunt's. I'm a Heinz person. My mother was a Hunt's person. There's no comparison. Generic ketchup.
We're
You've ever had good generic ketchup?
We're going to bring and give you a taste test on ketchup.
I can tell the difference. I can tell the difference. You know what?
Yeah.
We are doing a taste test on ketchup. Right. We are going to absolutely have
Carl do a taste test.
Yeah. You're going to go through the taste test, too, to see whether or not you can tell the
difference. I don't have a clue. Oh. No, I don't. They all taste the same.
Oh, no, they don't taste the same.
Okay, let's put the recipe together.
Gee willikers. Okay. Preheat the oven at 400 degrees. Spray a non-stick skillet with non-fat cooking spray. Mm-hmm. Over medium-high heat, sauté the onion and pepper for 5 minutes or so until it gets soft. Then in a large bowl, mix the ground turkey, cooked onion, peppers, and the cooked peppers, tomato sauce, breadcrumbs, or panko, as I would recommend, egg white, mustard, olive oil, Worcestershire sauce, garlic salt, white pepper, and cumin. Basically everything else in the recipe.
Yeah, right.
I really didn't have to go through it, but I did it because I knew you like detail.
Yeah.
And detail.
I was kind of nodding off.
That's
actually.
Why you were actually almost asleep. Spread the mixture into a loaf and place on the greased baking sheet. Spread ketchup over the top, yep. And then you bake it for 50 minutes. Until it's done.
Yeah.
And then you've got to let it stand for about 10 minutes. The meat thermometer should say 180 degrees. Very important because this is a poultry product.
Yeah.
Poultry has the potential of salmonella.
It sounds good.
So put in the instant meat thermometer.
Put it on the plate. You have some mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You have some fresh green beans.
Yes. And what else? Ketchup. Heinz ketchup.
It's already in the recipe.
Heinz.
800.
Or Hunt's if you like Hunt's.
800-462-7413.
Before you go to the phones, go to the website at www.zorbapastor.org. Pull down this recipe and watch Tom's picture. It doesn't move.
Yeah.
It's on the website, but it doesn't move.
All these years, I forgot to ask you how we can find the recipe.
You know, we're doing
Thanks
it's, no,
for
no,
jumping
no,
in.
No. It's retro. We're doing it in the retro form. We're doing it with an element of backwardsness to it. 1-800-462-7413. I got it right.
Very good, Zora.
I got it right.
800-462-7413 is our number. And Zorba, our next caller is in Bozeman, Montana. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
Well, I am concerned about a series of events that have happened to myself. I'm a 26-year-old, seemingly healthy female. And several months ago, while I was in basic training, I acquired a head injury from passing out. I had seizure-like activity for about 30 seconds, and when I awoke, I was rushed to the ER, had a large contusion on the temple of my forehead, and then several days later, a black eye showed up that lasted for about 2 weeks. And following this event, I had had persistent headaches that interfered with my sleep for about a full month, and then that had tapered off a bit until several weeks ago. I had a very distinct popping or snapping sensation on the side of my head as if something had burst. And I wasn't immediately concerned about it until about half an hour to an hour later, I had a feeling of pressure building. It didn't quite feel like a headache, but it was definitely uncomfortable. And then that led to a feeling of nausea and sensitivity to light and persisted for the rest of the day until it was just a horrible headache that kept me up from sleeping. And at this point, I was concerned because I had also felt the side of my face that I had had that snapping sensation, like it was going numb in several spots. And it was just unlike any symptoms I've ever had with a headache before. And I wasn't sure if this would be related to a head injury. I'd never had problems with headaches until after I had taken this fall. I had gotten so worried that I had ended up going to the emergency room and they ordered a CT scan just to see if there was any bleeding, and that came back clear, so I was relieved. But the problem that continued to worry me is that that headache and feeling of pressure, it seemed like it was originating from that same location or that snapping sensation, lasted for 3 straight days. And since then, I've had intermittent headaches, but they haven't been as long in duration. But just to have that feeling of pressure and a headache for 72 hours straight was just very worrisome.
Oh, yes. It can be very bothersome, especially in somebody who doesn't get headaches. Are you a headache person or a non-headache person?
I mean, I've had several throughout, you know, just normal headaches. It doesn't worry me too much. Usually if I take an aspirin or water, I'm fine.
What about your family history? Your mom, your dad, did they get headaches?
Not often, no. Nothing worries them.
Okay, so they don't get migraine headaches.
No.
Okay. Well, first of all, you have a concussion. You know, you had one, and you're in what is really sometimes called a post-concussive state. How long has it been since you had your concussion?
It has been 6 months.
Okay, so it's been 6 months. 6 months is a good amount of time. You know, if something like this happens in 6 weeks or 12 weeks, you say, well, it's really from the concussion. But 6 months is sort of on the other side of that. You've had a CT scan, so we know there's not a bleed. You know, it should be up there. If you had something called a subdural hematoma, which is blood between the brain and the skull, we would know that because it would have shown up by this time and it would have been very bothersome. And so that's not around right now. And knowing that is very, very important.
Right.
You might have, these might be a migraine variant headache. Now, were migraines brought on by the episode? Sometimes it's hard to tell. You know, certainly in time they were. You know, you fainted, you had a seizure-like activity. Did they do an EEG, by the way, to see if you're having seizures?
They did. They ran a bunch of tests, and everything seemed fine. It was just more of they were worried about my purses that I've had a history of passing out, and so
Sometimes, though, there's something called a sleep-deprived EEG where you're kept up. You stay up all night, basically, and then you sleep while the EEG is done. And sometimes there can be something called temporal lobe epilepsy, which is an epilepsy, a form of epilepsy that can actually cause a number of symptoms. Headaches can be one of those symptoms. So if you haven't had a sleep-deprived EEG...
I did. I remember, as it is in basic training, you're sleep deprived, but they further sleep deprived me. And I think I was only allowed 3 to 4 hours that night and went in and then had the EEG. And
Good. So
the results came back normal.
Okay, so you're not having seizures. We know that. You don't have a bleed in your head. Then I think the most likely diagnosis are these are migraines. Now, whether or not these are brought on by the injury or simply coincidental time-wise with the injury, that I can't answer. And frankly, you're not going to be able to answer that easily. But I think they're migraines, and I would treat them then as migraines with one of the excellent migraine medications, such as Imitrex, to see whether or not the headaches would go away with it. And that's what I would do. I would use Imitrex, a prescription drug. I'd look at that. I'd look at a beta blocker to prevent migraines, and I'd treat it that way.
As far as that snapping or popping sensation I felt in my head, would there be any explanation you could give as to what that might have been?
I don't know. I don't know what that is. You know, I'm not sure what that is. Post-concussive syndrome can produce a lot of symptoms. That I'm not sure of. I'll leave that to the next time you call. How does that sound?
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the call. So you're going to look up popping and then be
No, no, no. I didn't say I was going to look it up. I'm just going to leave it for the next time. Okay. I like that. That's a new thing I'm going to say if I don't know something. I'm going to leave that till the next time you call.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener named Amal. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, oftentimes recipes call for the use of kosher salt. Are we not supposed to use iodized salt all the time? What's the difference?"
Well, iodized salt is just fine to use. Kosher salt, in some recipes, it's a bigger crystal of salt. Iodized salt just happens to be more refined. And it doesn't really, it tastes differently on the surface of what you're using. And a lot of cooks say it actually tastes better.
Yeah.
It's not that you can really taste the iodine, but they think it tastes better from the way it dissolves. But you can always use regular salt instead of kosher salt.
Yeah, but if you use kosher salt all the time.
Oh, you don't want to use it all the time.
Are you not getting enough iodine?
You bet. You should not use it all the time because you need iodine. Yeah. You're correct. Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome, Zorba. Have a question for the good doc? Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a medical topic that's been in the news that's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, on our Medical Mythbuster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before our next call, these detergent pods that some people put in their laundry are really playing havoc with some kids.
Yeah, who does laundry in your house?
Both of us.
Both
do.
Of you. Do you use these pods or use powder?
No,
or what do
no.
you do? Powder, liquid?
Yeah, powder.
Yeah, see,
we use
liquid in our house. Yeah. But these pods are beautiful-looking pods. Go to the store. They're gorgeous-looking. They're colorful. They look like toys, and they look like candy.
Yeah.
And they've been introduced not that long ago, you know, just about 3 or 4 years ago, and they have blown up the Tide, Cheer, Joy, all. I mean, they basically have blown up the market, and people love them. And since that time, more than 17,000 children under the age of 6,
because these are
17,000 children ate, inhaled, or squirted the concentrated liquid packet into their eyes. You know, into their eyes or their mouth or somewhere else. There's at least one confirmed case of death, but there are a lot of confirmed cases of kids actually going into the hospital. Tremendous number of children going to the hospital. You know, basically it's about one kid an hour if you average out how many kids are going into the hospital. And it's increasing more and more and more. 6,000 were found in the emergency room. Last year, about 800 were actually hospitalized from these things. And that's because they look like candy, and they're in, for the most part, a lot of them are in clear plastic containers to make it look like a cookie jar.
Yeah. This is 1 and 2 year olds at
grade. These are 1 and 2 year olds. And I wrote about this 2 years ago. We talked about this 2 years ago because the poisoning was just beginning to rear its head as something that little kids are actually going to get a handle on. And this is detergent. I mean, kids don't put laundry powder in their mouth, and six-year-olds don't take those big containers and pour Tide into their mouth.
Yeah. I'm going to make some people mad at me, but what? Is it really too hard to take the bottle of detergent, pour some in the cap, and then put it in the laundry?
I guess we are so lazy that we want to have the thing. No, I think the other issue is because it's colorful, we adults like it too. We like to take out a little colorful packet and throw it into the water. Come on, this is marketing. It's packaging, you know? It's packaging. People like the package. Why do they buy Tide? They feel that it makes their clothes whiter. But if you look at some generics, they're just as good as Tide. Go to consumerreports.org and you'll find out that Tide wins because their mother used it and their grandmother and the perfume and the packaging.
Well, go back to the old style, or if you don't do that, keep that stuff away from
the
kids.
Or more importantly, if you have young kids in your house, you've got to make sure that this detergent is not where they can get a hold of it. The companies have stepped up to the plate to start using opaque containers instead of clear containers, but it's up to you as a parent to keep this stuff away from your child. Detergent is poison. Keep it away from infants.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in Orchard Park, New York. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I'm 80 years old and a widower, and about 14 years ago I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, the treatment for which included 4 months of female hormone therapy followed by 48 days of high-dose radiation. This treatment destroyed my testosterone and my sex drive, which has never returned. About a year ago, I started seeing this wonderful lady who I'm very fond of, and we recently decided we would like a physical part of our love. And my question is there any treatment that can restore my sex drive? And if not, does the over-the-counter medication Viagra or Cialis work without a sex drive?
They don't do much for the sex drive at all. They increase the flow to the penis when stimulated. So they do make a difference. And in a man who has erectile dysfunction, as do you, increasing that flow also then does feedback to the brain and makes it more likely that you're going to then get stimulated, which then makes it, as you think, more likely to actually have flow to the penis. And it's a feedback loop that has been quite effective in human reproduction for the last 10, 20, 30 million years. And so that's one thing to realize. One thing to realize is that they may help. Try it and see if it works. The other issue, you had prostate cancer, and you said, and so, you know, they basically castrated you chemically, you know, by giving you the anti-testosterone medications. And you really don't want to take a risk by taking testosterone in a situation like that because, you know, there can be some rogue prostate cells out there that we don't know about, and you don't want to take a risk with them. The drugs such as Viagra are certainly safe to take, but I certainly would stay away from testosterone in a situation like that. The other thing to begin to look at are other ways that you can actually enjoy each other's intimate company, and that would be things like massage for both of you. Taking a massage course, you know, engaging in intimacy through massage can be quite nice and sometimes can actually stimulate the sex drive, yeah. you know, in that. Going to a couples retreat. There are couples retreats all over the place. All you have to Google is couples retreat seniors and you will find them on the web. And you go and there are couples there who are trying to rekindle relationships or their older relationships. And I find it very interesting. What I find interesting in terms of ageism and sexism is a man who has a younger woman is often considered to be sometimes a dirty old man because he's looking for someone outside of his age. But a woman who's with a younger man is looked at even more askance as someone that is stranger. And the fact is winter-spring marriages are common, and sex among people over the age of 65 and 70 are much more common. We don't talk about it in our society because all the advertising is for young people to have sex, but older people like to have sex too. It's part of life and intimacy. So have you tried Cialis, Viagra, or Levitra?
No, I have not.
I would try it. See what it does.
Yeah, no harm.
Call your doctor. No harm at all. In fact, if you go online, you write down Cialis coupon or Viagra coupon, you can then get coupons for some free samples if your doctor doesn't have it. You need a doctor's prescription. Call up your doctor, and I would try all three of them. I know Viagra and Cialis have coupons, and I would use it, and there's no harm, you know, no harm, no gain if you don't use it, and see what that does. And look at a couple's weekend, but I would stay away from testosterone. I would never touch
and
that.
And, caller, you know this, I'm sure. Sex can be very, very pleasurable without penetration.
Right, right, right.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let us know what happens.
And thank you so much for the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, the important thing is to realize that that sex and intimacy is broader and changes throughout the life space.
Yeah.
So sex at 18 can be and is quite different than sex at 65. At 18, the thought about sex, even the thought about sex, can arouse you enough so you can actually have penetration. And at the age of 65, you need more than just the thought to actually be able to engage in any sexual act. But the thoughts about sex and intimacy can be the same throughout the life space and are an important part of life.
1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. Actually, let's call this one a meat myth buster. Today's question comes to us from a listener, Marge, in Madison, Wisconsin. She writes, a family member suffers from flare-ups of gout and has been told to cut down on red meat. Is pork a red meat? I know it used to be advertised as the other white meat, but it seems to me that's not correct, and I've noticed the TV ads have stopped. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, first of all, pork is red meat, and they were told to stop and desist because the FDA said, you are lying. You're calling it the other white meat because when you cook pork, it looks white.
Yeah.
White means poultry. Red means pork and beef. So yeah. Pork is red meat, and they stopped the ads for a bunch of good reasons. But gout and pork are not connected together. You can eat all the pork you want to because the treatment for gout, if you've got gout, is to take a uric acid-lowering agent, the cheapest one being allopurinol. Quite effective, works well, and is far better than any diet. In fact, years ago, before we had allopurinol, we would put people on these goofy diets where they had to – well, they stopped – they couldn't eat lobster. I know you have lobster every night, Tom. I couldn't eat shrimp. and a bunch of other uric acid, and that doesn't work nearly as well as the pills. And a good, cheap, inexpensive pill on the market is allopurinol. Euloric, which is a different pill, full disclosure, I did research for 5 years on it. But it's a good medication, and it's a good medication when the allopurinol fails. Yeah. The allopurinol is the first step to go because it works well. And I wouldn't be on any special purine-lowering diet because they don't do much.
So any meat is okay?
Yeah, pretty much any meat. Any meat is okay because if you have gout and you're getting flares of gout, you want to take a pill to lower your uric acid. It's far better than dieting. Far better than diet. Remember, Tom, I'm an omnivore. I mean, who wants to limit their diet for the rest of their life when you can take a pill that's much more effective?
Yeah. A lot of our listeners want to limit their diet for the rest of their life, and they're going to let us know about that. Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And you can find us on Facebook, and maybe we should have the diet police next. Oh, no, it's the diet.
800-462-7413, and now Zorba, a listener with us in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. My problem is that I can hear my heart rate pulse in my head. The sensation is constant. I've had this problem for 2 months. I had an ultrasound done of the carotids, and the left carotid is narrowed, which is more prominent in the left than the right. There isn't any treatment recommended at this time. Even though this sensation is constant throughout the day, it's more noticeable when it's quiet because I don't have the daily activities going on.
Let me get a little idea. You went to your doctor. You said, I've got this sensation. I feel my pulse. That's what you said? Is that when you saw your doc?
Well, I had the sensation before I went to the doctor.
Okay. They checked your carotid arteries.
Right. Not
unusual. How old are you?
68.
Okay. They checked your carotid arteries and they said there's some narrowing, but they didn't recommend anything. So, and we all have some narrowing. It's, if you're in your 60s and you've lived, chances are pretty likely you have some narrowing. Some narrowing can be very serious and some isn't. And so they didn't recommend any treatment, meaning that wasn't serious. But I don't really know if this is connected to the heart sensation that you have. Does your heart feel like it's going faster or slower? Tell me a little bit more about that.
Oh, no. You can just hear this swishing sound from, your heart rate and your pulse. Uh-huh.
Is it when you lie down, do you hear it more when you lie on your left side at all?
No. It's constantly the same, whether it's, throughout the day. But like I said, it's more noticeable when it's quiet because
You're quiet.
Right. And you don't have the daily activities occupying your mind.
Yeah, no, you're quiet, and that's pretty common. So, first of all, one of the things you want to do when you have an unusual sensation of the heart is you want to see whether or not the heart is functioning properly. Physical examination helps because you listen to the heart to see whether or not there's a murmur. Years ago, many years ago, we'd say if there's a murmur, you might be something serious, but now we can check it out right away with an ultrasound of the heart called an echocardiogram, and that basically tells us whether or not something is significant or not. And I think if you've got an unusual sensation of the heart where you're feeling it, it's probably important for you to get an echocardiogram to see how the valves are working in your heart and maybe a Holter monitor to look at how the heart is actually, what the pulse is like, if you will. But the echocardiogram is where I would go next. Obviously, it's a bothersome sensation. Are you anxious about it? Does it make you anxious?
No, it's just that it's in the head, the sensation. Yeah. I don't really feel it in the heart or anything like that.
So this is more in the head and in the neck,
right,
which is why they initially looked at the carotids. I think I would have an echocardiogram and I would find out what your heart is doing. I think that's what I would do. Because the sound may be going from the heart, may be actually originating from the heart, even though you're experiencing it in your head. So I think an echocardiogram would be something that would be useful for you to have.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let us know what happens.
Yeah, we appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. And before we head out, Zorba, let's take an email question from a loyal overseas listener named Katie. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, my question is about pain medication for giving birth. We have a healthy 14-month-old who was born via emergency C-section after 36 hours of labor. We had started a home birth, but the baby's head started down the canal off-center and got stuck, so labor stopped and we had to go to the hospital. The pain was bearable until about 24 hours, and after that, I was hoping an anvil would drop on my head like in the cartoons. We'd like to have another baby soon, but I'm terrified of the pain for a VBAC as well as terrified of having another C-section. What is a walking epidural? Could I really walk while laboring? I want to be able to move around and not to be stuck in bed. My spouse and I are proud supporters of your show. Thank you for your wonderful advice and comedic bantering. It makes me chuckle."
Well, it makes me chuckle too.
Yeah.
Epidurals are very good for pain in childbirth. Some women want to have them. Some women do not want to have them. It's a woman's choice of what she's going to do.
That's awful. What she went through is really hard.
Oh, it's terrible.
Really hard.
It's terrible. And quite often after childbirth, it's traumatic enough so that women don't have another child. And sometimes after childbirth, the trauma can disappear. I mean, there's no predictability to it. But in any case, it was a very, very problematic and difficult thing. Mm-hmm. Epidurals, you don't have the same ability to walk around often as you do. A walking epidural clearly is an epidural where you're able to walk around more, but you still don't have the same ability as if you didn't have an epidural. But for someone like this, an epidural is really the way to go. And think about it that way, so that if she's going to have another baby, I think it's important for her to know the epidural is there. You're going to use the epidural, because otherwise, as soon as the labor pain starts, you're going to become really anxious, and that's going to lead to more pain, more discomfort, and sometimes it's going to lead to a C-section that you may be able to get by without having it. So going to a VBAC, which is a vaginal birth, you know, essentially without cesarean, is, I think, the way to go. But realizing you may need another cesarean is also the way to go. Epidural.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Or don't forget, we're in Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1122Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.